From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, March 9th, 2017. And on this day, the olive green algae called rockweed is used in fertilizer and some consumables, and there's money in its harvest. But who owns it? And the surge in activism in defense of Planned Parenthood in Maine. That's all ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
We have been hearing today about reports that President Donald Trump's proposed budget will make big cuts in numerous domestic programs. Democratic Representative Shelley Pingree of Maine says the Trump administration plan to cut the Coast Guard and Federal Emergency Management Agency budgets is illogical and reckless. This after reports that the budget calls for a 14% cut to the Coast Guard and an 11% cut to FEMA. Pingree says the Coast Guard is particularly important to Maine because of the state's marine industry. The Coast Guard serves as a first responder for fishermen and boaters in emergencies. FEMA is also important to Maine because of the damage caused by major snowstorms, she says. Pingree's a member of the U.S. House Appropriations Committee. She says she'll push back against the cuts if they come forward. The presidential election has spawned an awakening of activists. Around the country, they are mobilizing around issues from immigration to education to health care. In Maine, Planned Parenthood in particular is seeing a sustained spike in volunteers. As Patty White reports, one of the reasons for that is the Republican replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act, which would defund the health care provider.
At a rally against the GOP proposal in Portland this week, Kate Cordaro worked her way through the crowd, armed with a clipboard and pen. Her mission? To get people to go on the record as supporters of Planned Parenthood and to sign up to volunteer, just like Cordaro did 5 months ago.
It's amazing how quickly you can see what an impact you're having and how powerful kind of that reach and touch is. It's been pretty amazing.
Cordaro says she felt it the very first time she worked a phone bank on behalf of Planned Parenthood to garner support.
I reached an older woman in northern Maine. She was so kind and sweet and immediately said, "Of course I totally support Planned Parenthood. What are you talking about today? What can I do to help?"
She was able to patch the woman through to Senator Susan Collins' office to carry the message one step further.
It was just so immediately exciting.
That kind of excitement is still going strong, says Planned Parenthood of Northern New England spokeswoman Nicole Clegg. Every month, Planned Parenthood in Portland holds an hour of power to train people how to support the organization and other causes. Before the election, Clegg says, about a dozen people would show up for these trainings. But over the past 5 months, the numbers have surged.
Usually we have close to 100 people attend each time. A couple of months, we've had to do two just to accommodate the interest.
At their most recent training session held this week, about 75 people packed the room, including Elizabeth Fowler, a teacher from South Portland.
The climate right now makes me feel like it's important to get out and do more in the interest of guaranteeing choice for my daughter and her generation and the generations that follow.
Some participants, like Alex Collins of Portland, say they recognize they can no longer be complacent.
You got to take action if you ever want things to change. I mean, if you look at the protests that are happening around the nation, like, they're actually having an effect on people. So it doesn't help just to complain about things.
Seizing on that eagerness for action, Planned Parenthood infuses it into the training. After giving tips for best practices to get in touch with lawmakers, a sample script is projected on a wall along with a phone number of Senator Susan Collins. And then everyone starts dialing.
I'm calling to ask that you stand up for Planned Parenthood and against efforts to defund it.
There is some concern that all of this energy could easily wane. Kathy Walter of Gorham attended the Portland rally before heading to the Hour of Power training.
Already a lot of my friends that I went to the march in Washington, I couldn't get them to come here tonight, and I'm disappointed. So I want to know how I can speak better and motivate people to do something.
Planned Parenthood's Nicole Clegg is aware of the need to harness sustained support and told as much to the crowd at the rally.
You need to understand this is a marathon. It is not a sprint. Our resistance, really our persistence, has to last.
Clegg says the trainings, though just an hour, are designed to give people skills that will last for the long term. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
So, are you ready to persist?
As the growing season approaches, industry experts say Maine's wild blueberry producers will likely have to slash production to keep the industry afloat. As Jennifer Mitchell reports, it's a case of too much of a good thing, and prices are suffering.
99% of Maine's wild blueberry crop is sold frozen. Strong harvests over the last three growing cycles in Maine, coupled with record harvests in Canada, have contributed to a glut of the berries on the market. Also, surplus yields of cultivated berries, which are usually sold fresh, have also wound up in the freezer case. Something will have to give, says Cooperative Extension wild blueberry specialist David Yarborough.
Growers are going to definitely have to make some reductions and changes because certainly you can't go on very long spending more money than you're making.
The price per pound paid to growers has slid from $1.07 per pound in 2007 to 46 cents per pound in 2015. Maine's largest grower, Wyman's, plans to cut back production acreage this year, and Yarborough says other growers will likely follow suit.
There may be some fields that they allowed to go fallow for a few years, or there may be some people that get out of production.
For consumers, he says there's never been a better time to buy the berries, which are plentiful, but he says market development is struggling to catch up to production. Strategies for boosting Maine's wild blueberry industry will be discussed at a trio of meetings later this month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And finally today, for 15 years, shorefront property owners, rockweed cutters, and Maine Department of Marine Resources regulators have worked to balance the competing interests that have tended to define the state's rockweed industry. Maine case law has produced mixed opinions on the question of who actually owns the olive brown algae that's used in fertilizer and some consumables. But as A.J. Higgins reports, a Washington County Superior Court case could help settle what's become a contentious rockweed debate.
At high tide, rockweed, a variety of seaweed, floats on the water's surface along the Maine coast, its rubbery olive-brown plant strands buoyed by a series of air bladders. At low tide, it drapes shorefront rocks to provide protective habitat for crabs and other creatures. It was a source of fertilizer for English colonists who spelled out access rights in the Massachusetts Bay Colony's Colonial Ordinance of 1641 to 1647. Since then, though, who owns Maine's rockweed, or Ascophyllum nodosum, as it is known in scientific circles, remains an unanswered question for property owners, conservationists, and harvesters.
Even in Massachusetts, there has not been a clear statement about whether or not the harvest of rockweed or intertidal seaweed in general, there hasn't been a definitive statement on whether that falls within the scope of the public trust doctrine.
Gordon Smith is a Portland attorney who represents several Washington County landowners upset that their shorefront properties have become targets for rockweed harvesters. They've made Acadian Sea Plants Limited the focus of a lawsuit filed in Superior Court. The Nova Scotian biotech company is the largest independent manufacturer of marine plant products of its type in the world. Smith says that, based on his reading of case law, it's clear to him that landowners control access in the intertidal zone of their property, a point he repeatedly made during arguments in court last week.
At the Superior Court level, where we are right now, I think the judge is going to be much more inclined to look at the legal principles that the parties have raised that may be old but are still, you know, relevant.
Smith is basing part of his argument on a Civil War era Maine case in which the court concluded that, quote, title to the seaweed is in the owner of the flats, and that, quote, seaweed belongs to the owner of the soil upon which it grows or is deposited, end quote. Exceptions granted by the court at that time include access by those engaged in fishing, fowling, or navigation. Modern Maine law maintains that the state, quote, owns and shall control the harvesting of the living resources of the seas adjoining the coastline. J.P. DeVoe, president of Acadian Sea Plants, says he interprets that to mean that rockweed, just like clams, marine worms, and periwinkles, is a harvestable organism in Maine.
So if we make the assumption that, you know, that the court decides that this is a public resource, Then what we would, you know, what we would like to see the state, and I think the state is very open to doing this, is that they would then come with a proper licensing program that would make sure that the resource and the harvesting of the resource would be managed properly in a long-term sustainable way.
At the Maine Department of Marine Resources, spokesman Jeff Nichols says while Maine statutes authorize the DMR commissioner to regulate the harvest of seaweed, the question of who owns the plant remains unresolved. According to the DMR, in 2014, Maine's seaweed harvest amounted to more than 17 million pounds. More than 90% of the estimated $20 million annual Maine seaweed harvest is of the rockweed variety, and DeVoe says he favors any interpretation by the courts that continues to provide his company with access to Maine rockweed, including a provision for exclusion zones.
In Canada, in some of the licenses that we have, the government has indicated we want these as either study areas or exclusion zones for various reasons. And certainly we've worked with the government where we, you know, cooperatively to be able to find the path and say, okay, we understand that you would not want to see seaweed harvesting in this specific area, and that's fine, and then it would be okay in other areas.
How rockweed sustainability is defined is a major issue for Robin Hadlock Seeley, senior researcher at the Shoals Marine Lab at Cornell University. What DeVoe and others need to assess, she says, is the impact that harvesting has on the dozens and dozens of marine animals that require the protection of the rockweed beds just to survive to maturity.
So the industry is looking at sustainability and asking the question, how much can we cut and how quickly does it come back so that we can cut it again? And, you know, from an ecological point of view, because this is habitat, we can't simply treat it, you know, as a biomass. We have to treat it as habitat, and we have to say, how much can you cut and still have it retain the same ecosystem function that it started with?
A decision from the judge could come later this month, and no matter how it unfolds, it's expected that the case will be appealed to the Maine Supreme Court. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Thursday, March 9th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and to our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.